Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Colors worth dying for. I did a lot of research this week about gang violence, but I'm the first to admit I know still very little. But I will tell you what I did learn. Authorities throughout the country report that gangs are responsible for most of the serious crimes in major cities in the U.S. Gangs engage in an array of criminal activity, including assault, burglary, drive-by shootings, extortion, homicide, identification fraud, money laundering, prostitution operations, robbery, sale of stolen property, and weapons trafficking. Located throughout the country, street gangs vary in size, composition, and structure. large nationally affiliated street gangs pose the greatest threat because they smuggle, produce, transport, and distribute large quantities of illicit drugs throughout the country and are considered extremely dangerous. But that's what I've learned this week. But what we have today is a panel of people that know firsthand because their professions have allowed them to meet gang members one-on-one, actually be there at the scene when things go down. So they're going to better tell us what they have learned from experience. But before I do, I'm going to introduce my co-host. We have Mr. Kundalini and Mr. A.J. Houston this afternoon. Good afternoon, A.J. Good afternoon, Mr. Kundalini.
What's up, Carrie? What's up, Mr. Kundalini, sir?
Mr. Kundalini, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm with you guys.
Okay.
I was trying to call in for some reason. I thought he was gonna try to hold me off on purpose. I've been trying to call in for the last 5-10 minutes. I was like Blog Talk hating on me today.
No, that's not happening. Y'all know what today's topic is. Any thoughts before we begin?
Well, me, I'm looking forward to hear what the group has to say because I think we all have our opinions and most of our opinions have been, I guess, added to, and we drew our conclusions from what we hear on the mass media, what we see on the news, and how people, you know, make it look this certain way. So I think having facts on the matter would actually help us to understand it a little better.
Okay. I'd like to remind everybody, Lenny and AJ will be in the chat room today, so if you have any questions or comments, you can post it up in chat, and they will bring it to the panel. Also, the views and opinions of... Yeah. I'm sorry? The views and opinions of our... do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage or the host. Were you saying something, Kundalini?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I know we had a chance to talk this morning about some of the gang activity and whatnot, and one of the things that I found really interesting, and I didn't even think to even bring this up when we were talking, but one of the things I'm starting to see, especially in hip-hop, all of a sudden, and I know some of these guys, you know, they're starting to be guys, especially some of them here within in the area, that are starting to come out with songs basically hyping up the gangbang activity, which is interesting right now.
Wow.
I've heard like 2 or 3 songs in the past maybe couple of weeks where they're actually trying to hype this up. And it's just interesting. It's like a resurgence or something out of nowhere.
I had noticed that. We'll ask the panel what they know about that. Are y'all ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. Ladies and gentlemen, my panel consists today of Mr. Melvin Carter. He's the director of the Boys and Girls Club here in Fort Worth. Also, we have who will be joining us in the second hour is Mr. Levi Williams. He's a spokesperson for the Dallas Police Department. Also, we have Dr. Walik Sabir. He's with the gang unit here with the Fort Worth Police Department in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Also, we have Mr. Steve Novacek. He's nationally recognized as a gang researcher and educator, best known, though, as the coroner from Pulaski County in the 1994 HBO documentaries Gang War, Banging in Little Rock, and Back in the Hood. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm opening up.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You all heard the introduction of what all gangs are involved in today, but we do know that back in the day, I believe the first gang was the Black Panthers, and they were not looked at by the community as being a bad figure. What happened that caused gangs to not be like considered what the Black Panthers were back in the 60s? I'll start with you, Dr. Sabir.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How is everyone?
Everyone's good.
What's up? Excellent. I know we all have our own opinions, but if I could make perhaps one comment, I do not necessarily acknowledge the Black Panthers as being a gang, and neither would I make that correlation between our criminal street gangs now with the Black Panther Party. However, if we're going to look at this from a historical standpoint, we have to take it much further back than what the Black Panthers may or may have not done in the in their community. But as far as the Black Panthers are concerned, you know, that started as a result of high levels of discrimination by the police, by our political figures, upon the Black community. And by no means do our local street gangs operate under such concepts. They operate strictly for the mere motivation and the profit and the sales and distribution of drugs. So there's really not much of a correlation between the Black Panthers and our traditional street gangs, if I could just kind of put that out there on the table.
Okay, that's fair. Steve Novacek, do you feel the same way?
I agree with him somewhat. I mean, I agree with him more than somewhat. I think there's really not a comparison to the contemporary street gangs that we're talking about now, the Crips and the Bloods. And gangs actually go much further back than that. There were street gangs in the turn of the century, at the late 1800s, and a lot of the street gangs originally started more as neighborhood, one group of people. For instance, in New York City, you had the Italian gangs, and you had the Polish gangs, and you had the Irish gangs. So it's a different kind of comparison. I think the Black Panthers were more of a political organization, and they were more about civil rights and those sorts of things. And like the doctor said, that's far removed from the contemporary gangs, posses, cliques, and crews that are on the streets today.
Okay, Mr. Melvin Carter, your thoughts.
Yes, I would agree. I would concur with both gentlemen. Definitely, you can't compare the Panther Party to street gangs. The Panther Party was a political movement, and the tone that was set during the day was to actually fight discrimination and all those and wrong all those rights. But from a historical perspective. We know that some of the things did come out of the Panther Party, mainly the Bloods and the Crips. But it didn't start with the Panther Party.
Okay. Well, knowing what we know about gangs, or what I, you know, put together just a little bit in the intro, how does somebody keep their child from being, not initiated, but brought into a gang? How do you keep them from being recruited into a gang? What can you do, if anything, to stop it? I'll start with Dr. Sabir again.
That's a very good question, and that's a question that we're presented with quite often. It's not a matter of you as a parent keeping a child out of a gang. It really has a lot to do with exposures, what your child is exposed to, not necessarily what you as a parent can or cannot do, but what is your child actually exposed to? You can homeschool your children, and yet they could still be exposed to an element that's within your household. You can also have a child that attends a traditional public school setting where there's all type of criminal street gangs that are involved in the community, and yet your child is not involved in a criminal street gang or involved with that. So a lot of it does has to do with exposures. I'll just kind of leave it right there.
Okay. Melvin Carter, you're out there every day with the Boys and Girls Club, and I understand from you that you have 10 sites where you all have gang members that come there. What can someone do to keep their child from getting involved in that element?
That's a $100 million question, but we know that a lot of the indicators, or the simple fact that the environment, some of the environments that the kids come out of, you can be a great parent, you can be from a two parent home, but when you get outside of the element of the home, or you go to the school, some of those things may entice individuals to join gangs. But I can tell you this. Providing your kids with activities, making sure that you know everything about your child, going to your kid's room and looking in the closet, and you know, I'm from the old school. I believe that, you know, my home is my home. It's not, my kids don't own my home. So every room in the house belongs to me. So I have the opportunity to go in. You know, some kids say, don't go in my room. That's my private area. We don't have any private areas in my home, and then that's just my opinion. But going in and looking at the looking at the, in their closets, looking at the things that they're doing, watching the friends that they're associating with, all those things can cause you to be better aware of your child's behaviors, and I think that could be a start in at least educating yourself on what your kid is doing. Not necessarily it's going to stop you, your kid from being in a gang.
Okay. Mr. Novacek, I checked out the footage from Gang War banging in Little Rock, and I saw that you were actually caught in a crossfire on one of those scenes in that documentary. And you got a chance to talk. I think his name was LaFell Jackson. And LaFell
right.
Jackson was saying that somebody had came to him and told him that they wanted their child to stop hanging with them. But the parent obviously did not know how to articulate how can I get my child out of this. So what can a parent do to keep their child from ever even getting involved with that type of element?
Well, your other guest had pretty much nailed it on the head. You know, one thing that I really encourage is communication, too, and understanding and knowing. I always tell people whenever I get introduced as an expert on gangs, I say, you know, I'm not really the expert. Their kids are the experts, and that's who we all learn from. So I think it's important that parents become educated, that they know what's going on in their children's lives and at their schools and every other part of their life. And the comments about knowing what's in your child's room and what they're doing on the computer and who their friends are and who their friends' parents are, not just, you know, the name of the parent. But I, from my corner days, I can tell you that as I would do investigations, there were a lot of times when I would go into a child's bedroom because that was their domain, and that's really where you could learn a lot about the child's life and what they were doing. But it was always surprising to me how many parents had never even been in their room, how many parents didn't know what they had in their room, in their drawers and under their mattress and those sorts of things. So understanding, and I tell you, what communities have to really focus on doing, if you really want to beat the gang issue or you want to beat the gang recruitment efforts, you have to compete with gangs. You have to sort of begin to understand why so many kids are drawn to those things and why that communities, why it would be so easy to provide those many of those things that those kids need in other areas like Boys and Girls Clubs and those sort of intervention programs. That's the way we're going to beat this battle. We're not going to be able to hire police and build jails. That's not going to fix this issue. The issue is, as pretty simple, that we have children who, for whatever the reason, they're in what I call the 5-H club. They're helpless, hopeless, homeless, hungry, and hugless. And what communities have to do and recognize is that we owe it to each other to help each other. And to you help a child, that helps that child's family, and of course that just helps the whole community. So it's just real important to understand the issue, not stick your head in the sand about it, and compete with them. Understand why they're doing it and figure out why the kids are doing it, and then provide them those things in other places, just like the Boys and Girls Club down there in Fort Worth.
Well, let me ask you this, and I did see your 5-H club, the 5-H's, and one thing I didn't know if I agree with is that all of them aren't hungry. You didn't mean like just hungry in terms of no food, did you, or were you talking about hungry for something else?
Well, you can interpret those however you want, but I will tell you this, that we know in this nation that a lot of kids are in below the poverty line, and they are hungry, and for instance, in my hometown of North Little Rock, Arkansas, within a 10-minute drive of City Hall, there's over 10,000 children that are below the poverty line. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of kids, and you another gauge you use in a community is how many kids in your schools are on the federal lunch subsidy program.
Okay.
So when you take those sort of figures, and in Arkansas, in North Little Rock, the average at our schools is 70%. So if you've got 70% of the kids in the school that are having to get food subsidy, well, that means that in all likelihood, what are they doing on the weekends? There's So I think people have not really understood the importance of that link from poverty to the issue of crime, and especially street gangs and kids that get involved in street gangs, because poverty is an issue.
Okay. Melvin Carter, would you say that the root cause of kids getting in gangs would be what Mr. Novacek said, or is it bigger than that?
Well, it's all of those things. I do agree. A lot of the kids are hungry. Believe it or not, it's very simple. Some simple solutions, and one is food. A lot of our kids are going hungry. A lot of our kids are living below the poverty level, and a person that's hungry will basically join forces with anyone who would feed them. And once you feed an individual, whether it be food or whether it be knowledge or whatever, you become loyal to that individual, and you feel like, you know, that person cares about you. A lot of these kids join gangs because of a sense of belonging. They, you know, not only will the gang members give them food and nutrition, but also, you know, bad knowledge and make them feel like they're part of something, make them feel like they're part of a family. So, yes, food is a big issue. But also in our program, we like to take the kids out of the environment, show them a different side of the world. I mean, a lot of our kids are trapped in neighborhoods and they don't even understand that, you know, just going simply across town to a museum or going to another city, you know, is very impactful in their lives, and it begins to make them dream that, you know, I can get out of this environment. I don't have to be part of this environment. The biggest things we see in our community right now is the drug dealer and you know, gangs, and of course we got a church and a liquor store on every corner. So these are some of the things that the kids are faced with, and I do agree that hunger is an issue in our community.
Wow. Dr. Sabir, root cause of gang violence. I mean, what causes, I shouldn't say gang violence, what causes someone to join a gang? What's the root cause?
You know, there isn't just one root cause. And there are a lot of causes, a lot of roots to this tree that we're talking about here. Oftentimes, what I have found in dealing with young people, it boils down to a choice. You know, as human beings, we have free will. And regardless of whatever your religious, cultural, or language might be, we all have free will. God gave us that. And oftentimes, because of the exposures that have been mentioned, because of the environment, because of the social conditions, the economic conditions, et cetera, we make choices. And if I find that lifestyle is more attractive than what I'm being presented through other traditional means, then I've made that choice. Now, in some communities and throughout the country, you find that oftentimes it is a matter of kind of like the Indian caste system, that my dad was a gang member, my uncle was a hustler, and my granddaddy was a pimp, and therefore I'm going to be just like them. But
wow,
it still boils down to an individual choice.
Okay. Well, then let's discuss the youngest age group or the youngest age of a gang member that you've seen. Melvin Carter, you're out there every day with the Boys and Girls Club. What's the youngest age of a gang member that you've seen?
I've seen them at 10. And I mean pretty consistent 10-year-olds. But if you look into the root cause and you look back, you will see where parents who are ill-equipped to raise kids are showing their kids at an early age of 1 or 2, you know, how to hold their hands in gang signs, or how to put the rag on them, or put a rag on their head, or put a rag around their body, and kind of start to teach that kid this is the direction that we're going in. But consistently, I would say the youngest age I see is around 10 years old.
Oh,
can I add to that?
Yes.
Just 2 days ago, I met a 11-year-old fifth grader who was a member of one of the largest street gangs in our city. And hold on. And on top of that, and speaking with him, he said actually he had been put down. He was put down last year. So he was put down in a gang as a fourth grader.
Wow. And a fourth grader is age, what, 10? 11?
He was 10 at the time. So, yeah, to go along with what Mr. Carter is saying, we see this quite often.
Wow.
Quite often, yeah.
Steve Novacek, I remember in your documentary where the OG, as they call him, that was in prison said that he had been taught really young how to point a gun and kill people. What was his age when he was brought into the game?
Nine years old, yeah. You know, and there's different levels, of course, but when you have a kid that we know, I work for the Division of Youth Services for the state of Arkansas now, and one of the things that we know is that the majority of the kids that come to youth services, they're referred, they begin their career to us in their early years, second, third, fourth, and fifth grade, being referred to the office in school for various things. Now, so that shows me that the importance of the schools having a collaboration with the community to deal with that. And so they're going in very young. I mean, they look to gangs to give them identity and recognition and belonging and discipline, oddly, and love and respect. And those are, a lot of those are false, that they really don't, the gangs really don't give them that in the long run, but they're told that. And remember, if you've got kids that are in that 5-H club anyway, they're going to gravitate and look to that. That's why probably one of the most powerful and one of the best intervention and prevention tools now is strong mentoring programs and, you know, getting these kids at a very young age and hooking them up with good, positive mentors in the community. So, I mean, and that's where the battle really is in the middle school years and the late elementary years. Usually these kids, by the time they get to high school, there's not going to be any diversion for them in many cases. There can if they want to, but the most important place for communities to really focus our efforts is in the prevention area, and that's in the middle school and younger age group.
Okay. We know that gang activity, it crosses class lines. We know that there's kids that have means that still end up in gangs. So let me ask the question, if a parent finds out that their child is involved in a gang, should they themselves go to the gang and confront the gang about letting their child out, or what should they actually do?
No. I mean, let your other guests talk about it down there, but I would not advise them to do that. Now, if they go with one of your guests, who obviously it's best to have an ambassador, whoever the ambassador is, if you're going to try to do that. Now, that's my opinion. I'll shut up and let your guest address it.
Melvin Carter. If my child's in a gang and I want them out, do I go and confront the gang, or what do I do?
No, please don't.
Oh.
Please don't do that. That could be detrimental to not only your kids' health, but also to your health.
Really?
That's
like to call
stuff.
So how does your child get out then if you don't confront the gang? The child obviously doesn't know how to get out. So how do you get your child out?
How do you get your child out? For one, you simply communicate with your child. And you make sure that you find people like myself, like the guests, you know, the doctor and you know, both doctors. I mean,
mm-hmm.
You find people who have a link to that gang, or who have who we like to call it, who has a good hood credit card. They can speak to those individuals about, you know, maybe your child being involved and kind of go in and be that ambassador to that gang, to say to that individual, this parent really is concerned about their kid. That's not going to always necessarily get that kid out, because you don't know how far that kid is in. So
mm-hmm.
It really takes someone who has a linkage to that gang or to those gangs that the gangs respect, and I would advise that you would find that type of individual. It may be the OG. You never know. He may be a guy who's not actively involved in the gang, but has some ties to that gang. It may be a police officer. It may be someone who can speak to that need. But definitely, I wouldn't just go inside the neighborhood and say, okay, I want my kid out the gang. They still wouldn't, even if they let you in. You that doesn't necessarily mean that your kid is going to be let out the gang, because it's a little more complicated than that. Your kid decided to join the gang, so
and there's no telling what
he's been deep.
There's no telling what sort of crime he's been involved in too, and that's excellent advice. That's what LaFell Jackson in the documentary, who initially, back when that documentary first aired, LaFell had a put a $10,000 bounty on my head because
wow.
he thought I was a narc. And he didn't finally he realized as time went on that I wasn't, and I got my credibility because I kept going back. He told me one time, he said, I just started talking to you because you were always here. I never, you were just, every time I looked up, you were in the neighborhood, and I was just trying to campaign to get those kids to quit killing one another. But now LaFell does that, and he has a great deal of credibility in the neighborhoods, and I refer people to him almost every day from my profession, but also from still, just my knowledge of what's happening on the streets. I refer him parents almost every day for him to talk them through it, and LaFell's in a position where he can go act as that intermediary, because you we're beating a dead horse here, because I think all of our advice would be not to have a parent go do that. That sort of thing is something you might see in a movie, and it has happened. I won't say it hasn't happened, but I will tell you this: you never know who you're dealing with, what their level of anger is, why what drug they might be on or not on. So you just have to really concentrate, and you have to know that, just like your guests down there, they are the experts. They know what's happening. Parents need to reach out to them, because they know the inroads, and the kids on the street know them, and I can't tell you how much I endorse having people that know what's going on in the neighborhood use them as your ambassadors. And sometimes that involves using former gang members. Those sometimes can be with good, strong monitoring and somebody who they can't pull the wool over their eyes. If you have somebody working with you in a program, they can really make a lot of inroads, like LaFell's done here.
Dr. Sabir, was it in Fort Worth or was it in Dallas recently? I want to say within the last 6 months, where a mother's child got beat into the gang. And when he came home all bloody, she confronted the gang, and they did a drive-by and killed somebody that was on the porch?
I don't think that was Fort Worth.
It was either Dallas or Fort Worth, but that happened recently here in this area. But your advice as far as what should a parent do if they don't want their child in the gang, they should not confront the gang?
Yeah, I think what has been mentioned is the absolute best advice, and what we find is that any intervention that a parent or guardian makes needs to be by way of involving that child in other activities that will slowly but surely pull that child or that individual away from the lifestyle. I keep saying lifestyle because that's ultimately what this thing becomes. It's a subculture, but it's a lifestyle that people adhere to, and once you change your lifestyle, then the people from your previous lifestyle typically don't get involved in your current lifestyle. And what I mean by that is involving your child, involving that young person in other activities. It could be something related to the church, something related to some volunteer work. Typically, the type of young people that Mr. Carter and I deal with are teenagers or young adults, and oftentimes the conversation changes or have to change because school is really not an option for them at this point. So now we're looking at involving them in a GED program, perhaps a Job Corps, the military. There's a number of other resources that we can redirect, and we have to offer something to redirect them into simply because the lifestyle that they have been a part of has been so overwhelming, they don't know anything other than that.
Okay. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHD's 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage with today's topic, gang violence. Are your colors worth dying for? If you're on the line and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, dial us up at 347-850-8390, and again, press 1. A reminder, AJ and Kundalini are mining the chat room today, so if you have a question or a comment, you can post it up in chat, and they will bring it to the panel. Speaking of initiation a minute ago, what have you all seen in terms of initiations as far as these gangs are concerned? What is the initiation process all about? Because, you know, I've heard people say people are beat into the gang, and then I've also heard people say, I think once a year you'll see these emails that will circulate to say gang initiation is going on right now. Be careful because they have to kill somebody to get into the gang. What is the case with that? Mr. Carter, what do you know about gang initiation?
Gang initiation, we see various ways that kids are initiated in the gang. But with the emergence of the Internet, anybody can be a gang member now. You know, it's Facebook, MySpace. We call them internet gangsters. They can basically perpetrate and say who they are. But the traditional way of being, you know, being put into a gang is basically there. A couple of ways I've seen it. They've even to the point of guys and girls being sexed into the gang. They've been beat in. That's one way of going about it. But some of the messages that we're sending, you know, what our fraternities and even sororities, I belong to a fraternity, and some of the things that we do in the hazing process, the gangs look at that and say, well, what's the difference in what you do and what we do? You know, we have double standards in society. We're saying that, you know, don't do this or don't do that, but yet and still we're participating in some of those type of activities. So I warn all sororities and fraternities to be very careful at the message that you're sending. But there are so many. You can be blessed in. I mean, it could, you know, there's ways that you can get involved, you know, be involved in the gang, and a lot of our Hispanic gangs are basically their grandfather was, you know, generational. So their grandfather was a gang member, and so they kind of, you know, go into this, you know, knowing that they're going to be the next generation, or they're going to be the next gang member. But there are a lot of ways that these kids, get involved there are a lot of ways that they're initiated. As far as the lights and you got to kill someone, mm-hmm. You got to be very careful with those because those are a lot of myths out there. You know,
don't they say like, you know, be careful about flashing your lights because, you know, they're going to shoot.
That's all internet garbage. None of that's true. None of that ever happened. There were several variations of that, and they roll back around every once in a while. And we had them, and probably y'all did too, about the guys laying underneath the cars at the mall parking lot and slicing women's legs and just all kinds of crazy stuff. That's all somebody that doesn't have much of a life and they just sit and make stuff up on the Internet. Not like there's enough trouble already without that sort of stuff, because I know your guests down there are probably the same as me. My phone starts ringing off the wall as soon as those Internet rumors start spreading, and they do come around about every year.
Wow.
Yeah. The best thing to do is don't depend on the Internet. You depend on those experts. The guests I'm on here with right now, I can tell those guys have been around the block a time or two. So those are the people that people in neighborhoods need to rely on and depend upon. And that's who really is going to fix this problem. This is a neighborhood issue. This is a community issue. This isn't a one single person. This isn't a one single race. This is an everybody issue, because all kinds of kids are getting wrapped up into this violence. And while the gangs have made this sort of transition, and at least this is what we're seeing here over the last several years from the era of the really organized Crips and Bloods and Disciples and Vice Lords and those sorts of Chicago and Los Angeles-oriented gangs, now what we're seeing are a lot of little neighborhood posses and cliques who will tell you they're not a gang, but it's, you know, the old duck's a duck theory, and they're doing the same thing. And it's almost all now related to crime and drugs and those sorts of things. But that takes me one step back again to the importance of people having an education, people having jobs, and dealing with poverty as a community. Let me tell you a link, and one of your guests was talking about education and GEDs and one of the problems that you have. There, last year in the Department of Corrections, in the prison department in Texas,
mm-hmm.
80% of the inmates had dropped out of high school.
Right.
Now, that is a link to me, and I can tell you in Arkansas, I don't know the Texas figure, but in Arkansas last year, in Arkansas, our prison system, about 70%, 65 to 70% of the inmates dropped out of prison, dropped out of high school, and we have 8,000 kids last year that dropped out of high school. So that's an easy connection that the public needs to get and that the communities need to get about how important education is. When
yeah.
your prisons are got 80% of the inmates that dropped out of high school, that ought to be a wake-up call to our educators and to our communities as a whole.
Okay. Let's go to the phone lines. Area code 903. Good afternoon. Welcome to Center Stage.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, this is Jerome Lies.
Okay, I'm sorry. Jerome Lies was part of the panel, and Mr. Lies, we did not know if you were going to make it or not. Mr. Lies is an ex-juvenile correctional officer that dealt with gangs. Am I getting
yes.
you correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. We talked a lot about gang activity. We were just talking about the initiation, and I didn't get to you, Dr. Sevier, but maybe you can answer that question, Mr. Lies. And what do you know about gang initiation from what you've heard or what you've seen?
Oh, basically, what I know about gang initiation is that most people or most juveniles that I've worked with have always had to be jumped into a lot of gangs.
Okay.
As far as the males. Now, as far as the females, there's different ways that you can be in, and you can be jumped in, or you could be, you know, have sex with a member and things like that to become one of the gang members.
Okay.
As far as female wise.
Okay.
And you have a lot of them that do that.
Okay.
You know.
Dr. Sevier, initiation, anything different than what we've heard?
No, it stays fairly consistent. And what's even really interesting, even if we were to be talking about your more organized gangs, you know, motorcycle gangs and other type of gangs, the initiations basically are very consistent, and they stay the same pretty much from one country even to another. They stay basically the same.
Okay. Let me ask a question that makes me sometimes very nervous. It's this retaliation thing. We hear people talk about they disrespected me. I mean, disrespect could be just a gang sign or just some language, and someone can end up being dead that night. What is the deal with just no respect for human life? And I guess I don't understand how they just, I don't know, carelessly kill each other over the smallest thing. What is the retaliation thing about? Why is it that they resolve what they consider disrespect through retaliation of like shooting up a house or killing several people over one member disrespecting them, and that member may not even be the person that they get in the drive-by? So can someone explain the retaliation aspect of gang life?
Well, this is Jerome. My opinion on it is that the disrespect is not, nowadays, is not just throwing a gang sign. It's disrespect of coming in my neighborhood even with just the wrong color on. I mean, it's got that crazy now to where it doesn't even matter. It's a form of like me walking into your house and just cursing when you don't curse. It's disrespect. That's the way it is. They don't care, and that's the way they look at it, you know.
Dr. Sevier, is that what we're seeing in Fort Worth?
You know, you asked the question earlier about root causes, and
it really shouldn't be as surprising to us when someone that's involved in that lifestyle chooses to shoot or maim or assault another human being, understanding the culture of this country. We live in the most violent, industrialized country on this planet. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. By far, we have the most number of homicides by way of firearms, and we have one of the highest mortality rates when it comes to our youth. And so when young people or individuals that are involved in that lifestyle, when they choose to result and resolve their problems through violence, through shootings and killings and stabbings, that doesn't surprise me whatsoever.
Wow.
And the retaliation aspect of it, that's what you signed up for. When you sign that contract and say, I'm getting involved in this lifestyle, you also have to say to yourself that someone may retaliate on me and I might be required to retaliate on someone else. You know, that's what makes this such a very serious thing to discuss, and for people, even young people who get involved in that lifestyle, that when you sign up for this, you're basically saying, I am willing to take another human being's life, even though it was for 50 cents, even though it was for a bag of chips, even though it was for a stare, a color.
Yeah. Steve Novacek, how many bodies, the year that you all did that documentary, how many bodies did you see come through your morgue as a result of just gang violence?
We had, let me see, I'm trying to think back. It seems like there were 111 homicides, I think. Our homicide rate increased 300% over a 10-year period. And probably during the height of the gang war years, which were 93 and 94, our homicide rate in Little Rock was greater per capita than it was in New York City and Los Angeles. And probably I would say 50% of those were related to the violence and the youth violence on the street. You know, this is talking about reputation and respect and retaliation. That's what I tell people are the three R's of gangs are respect, reputation, and retaliation. And the retaliatory part of that is almost always escalating in nature. We could, those of us that are on the streets and that track it and know what's happening and know what crews are working in what neighborhoods, we used to could tell you when a shooting or a death occurred in one neighborhood, we could almost always, maybe we couldn't pinpoint the neighborhood where it would occur, but we knew the groups that it was going to occur between. So we were able to do a lot of intelligence work on that. And the other thing that showed me the importance of back then was the importance of the police and the intervention and prevention people working the streets sharing information with the school districts, because a lot of this violence carries over to the school. If it starts on the street on the weekend, it's naturally going to take itself to school on Monday. So there has to be a unified effort within the community. This is something that not just interventionists and preventionists and police have to do to deal with. This is something where the business community has to be involved, and the legal community, the administrators, the elected officials. I mean, this is something, and oddly, there is something in the fix of a community for everybody, whether you're a conservative or a liberal. There's something in there for everybody that's needed in being able to fix this issue. You know, and the doctor was talking about the culture of our society now and the violence and those sorts of things. We all know what's going on politically, and we all know about the hatred and the things that people are, spouting on the air and in the newspapers, and it's just sort of a horrible environment that our kids are being raised in, this violence and anger that seems to be surrounding us. But I gave the keynote address several years ago to the National Association of Attorneys General. Every attorney general in the United States was in this room with me, 50 of them from all across the United States. This was in Los Angeles when I did this, and I told them, when I gave the speech, the only line from my speech that made the newspaper was when I compared that room of 50 Republicans and Democrats with a room of 50 Crips and Bloods that I had been in 2 weeks prior.
Wow.
That the dynamics of the rooms were exactly the same. Respect, reputation, retaliation. And that goes on not only in the most guttural of street gangs, that goes on in the halls of Congress. And we have to figure out a way in this society where people, adults are modeling what our children are doing. And if our children see adults treating each other like we have been for the last several years, the political discourse that's been going on, I think that in itself is adding to the violence and the increase in the violence and the crime on the street and in the schools. I think that it's all related, and everybody has to step back and look at themselves in the mirror and say, am I part of what's creating this culture of violence in our country and this culture of hatred? I'm telling you, I am really concerned about what's happening in this country, and it affects the kids that we're talking about right now even more than it affects adults many times.
Wow. If you just tune in, you're listening to the all-new KLHD 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic, gang violence. Are your colors worth dying for? If you're on the line and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, call in at 347-850-8390, and again, press 1. A reminder, AJ and Kundalini are manning the chat room today, so if you have a question or a comment, you can post it up in chat, and they will present it to the panel. We're going to go back to the phone line, area code 817-443. Good afternoon, you're on center stage.
Hey, what's going on? This is Eastwood Red.
Hi, Eastwood Red. Eastwood Red to talk with this week, and we were going to put Eastwood Red on the panel. But once we had a pre-interview with him, we were concerned. Kundalini and I talked with him off the air earlier this week, and we didn't know if it was smart to bring gang members from varying gangs and put them on the panel, because we were concerned that we didn't want to be part of a problem. We didn't want to incite anything. We didn't want to be considered being the author of confusion, so we decided against it. So Eastwood is calling in to tell us, obviously, something that he thought about something the panel said.
Yeah, I was listening to y'all. You know what I'm saying? Like the man say, it's all what he said. That's real.
You are a member of a street gang here in Fort Worth.
Yes, Eastwood Pyru.
You're Pyru. Okay, so who are you referring to? Who said something? Who are you referring to that said something that is all real?
Well,
you mean everything
just,
that the panel said so far?
That's real tough. You know, it's all about respect. You respect somebody, you know what I'm saying? You're gonna get respect.
Okay, but I mean, so why is it so much disrespect on the street then that there's so much killing amongst, you know, different gangs killing each other? Why is that happening? If everybody knows that the whole idea is about respect, why is there so much disrespect?
You got a bunch of hard heads out here.
Wow.
You know, you got a bunch of youngsters that always, you know, want to disrespect somebody all the time, and you know, and then that's why they get dealt with.
Hey, one of the questions that I asked Eastwood Red off the air was, "If are your colors worth dying for?" And Eastwood Red, tell him what you told me.
Yes, mine is.
When I titled the show, I really was hoping that the title was not true to life. But Eastwood Red said, in fact, it is. And I said to him, well, you have children, you know, and so are you not more concerned about living for your children than possibly dying for your gang? And your answer was, Eastwood Red.
Yeah, it's both, but you know what I'm saying? It's going to come a time we all have to go one day. You know,
hey,
so
Terry?
Yes, sir. That's Steve Novacek with
let me say something here while he's on the line. Since in 1988, when I was the coroner here, I got a bulletin from the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta, Georgia. They began tracking the homicide rate for young black men in this country as an epidemic. The very agency that tracks the AIDS epidemic and all the other horrible causes of death in the world, They track the homicide rate for black men in this country as an epidemic. And they still do to this very day. The leading cause of death for black men under the age of 35 in this country is homicide. And the leading cause of death for African-American women in this country under 35 is AIDS. And to me, both of those things are preventable. Now, whenever I had a death of a young black man in my community that I had to report the death to the Centers for Disease Control, you know, almost 95% of the time, you know who killed that young black man?
Another young black man. Yeah.
That's exactly right. So an entire generation of young men in this country is at risk, so much so at risk that the Centers for Disease Control tracks the homicide rate for African-American men is an epidemic. And those things are preventable. And that starts with education. And that starts with people like Red that's talking to us right now, reaching out and figuring out how we can end this horrible violence. It's over money, it's over drugs, but a lot of it has to do with just simple act of disrespect. But I tell you what, we have to make it clear that we have to have alternatives for young people, because that's one of the feelings, that's one of the reasons that kids feel hopeless, because young men know those sort of statistics and they know the rates of failure. That's why we really have to examine the way we've been doing things in communities, and the communities have to step up to the plate. Preachers have to step up to the plate. Many churches and many communities are failing their communities. They know, I mean, I've got a friend here who sent, he was telling me how much money that his church had sent to Haiti, and I took him 10 blocks to a woman who didn't have water in her house because the landlord wouldn't fix it, and her child got kicked out of school for fighting because the other kids were picking on him because he smelled bad because they didn't have water. Those are the kind of issues that we need to address as communities, and churches need to step up to the plate on this one, I'll tell you.
Melvin, what would you say to an Eastwood rep?
Yeah, I would say first I would reach my hand out to him and say, I'm a black man just like him, and I care about him and I love him, and if he needs any assistance, anything that I can do for him, I definitely would give him my phone number and let's just wrap a text. Let's talk about what I could do to help and what he could do to help me. I mean, we're in this thing together. We've got to find a way. Because one of the things that we've been taught is to hate ourselves. Mm. We've been taught self-hatred. When we look in the mirror, we really don't like what we see. So it makes it really easy for me to pull the trigger on someone that looks like me, because I don't have love for myself. So one of the things that I would say to Mr. Red is let's sit down, man. Let's talk, because there's a lot of little brothers out there and a lot of sisters that we could save, and not only in the Eastwood area, but also we can save across Fort Worth.
Well, Melvin Carter, in our conversation earlier this week, wasn't it you that told me living is hard, dying is easy, so these gang members don't fear death?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, if you think about your own life, I mean, when those credit card bills come in and those mortgage notes come in, it's really hard to pay them. It's a lot harder to live, and I say those things in jest, but it's a lot harder to live and do the right thing versus, dying, because dying is the end. And some of our kids don't see themselves going past 20 or 21 or in some cases 16, 17, 18. They don't see themselves, graduating high school. They don't see themselves going to college. You know, those are somebody else's dreams. Right here in Fort Worth, I have kids that don't even realize that TCU is in Fort Worth. You know, they've been by the campus, they see the campus, but they really don't realize that that is a campus where, you know, I can go to school or any of the other areas. So we've got to, it's a lot easier just to die. I mean, dying is over. It's finished. But living is so hard.
Dr. Bear, which one are you brothers going to help me out there?
Mr. Carter? Yes, I'd definitely be the one. What do you need, brother?
Hey, a lot. I need a lot. I need a good club. I need, you understand what I'm saying? You want me off these streets? You want me to stop doing what I'm doing? You understand what I'm saying? Because, hey, the way I'm out here doing now, you know what I'm saying? I got to get it how I can.
And I definitely understand that. I mean, you know, I definitely understand your plight. But one of the things we have to sit down is do an assessment of yourself and see what are you qualified to do? What direction can I put you in so that you can obtain employment? What type of employment do you want to obtain? And what are some of the other issues that we need to deal with as far as you're concerned?
But don't we also have to address the fact that most of these gang members don't have high school diplomas. They don't have any actual job skills. So when they're looking at making the quick buck that they make in the gang life, it's not going to be that easy to transition them into a 9-to-5 and make the same kind of money. Is that not correct, Dr. Sabir?
Yeah, absolutely correct. You know, when you look at our offenders, and I'm just going to use this particular statistic here, when you look at our offenders in Texas, our youth offenders, over 60% of them have not even made it to the 10th grade. So when we look at just from an educational standpoint, not only are they uneducated, but they're undereducated in a lot of instances. And they know it just as well as the rest of us, that is the education, your skills, your training, your aptitude, all of those things are the things that take you to the levels that you really want to go to in a legitimate way. My brother there was talking about, you know, getting what he got to do and doing what he's got to do. Yeah, but at the same time, he realizes that he's always got to look over his left and right shoulder. You know, everybody got to hustle, but I don't have to look over my left and right shoulder trying to see who's trying to get what I've got. But we know that the right skills, the right training, the right education allows you to walk down the street, allows you to drive down the street, allows you to do what you need to do with your head up high and your chest stuck out without having to worry about somebody trying to take yours through that way. But, yeah.
Doctor, can I say this? This is Jerome Lyson. About the education, I'm in the education system now. I left the juvenile correctional system, and I'm in the education system now. And you're right about what you're saying, but the thing is I got about the education system is that we don't have in Texas right now, we don't even have enough funds. They're already talking about cutting funds because there's not enough money. Then on top of that, I look at it, my problem I see is there is not enough males in the education system to help with this whole situation. Because, you know, we talk about the communities and everything else too, and also one other thing that plays a big part in this is the media. Every day you see radio, rappers, different things like that. The media know how to play a role in this whole situation. They know how to make young people go towards a certain game. Even like that, it's like playing with a puppet. It's like they got strings on a lot of people. And we need to cut those strings and figure out how can we cut those strings. And that's a big problem.
Well, let me ask you. Go ahead.
One of the things that we're working on here in Arkansas is in the Little Rock area is we're developing a system that is a collaborative effort between the faith-based organizations, all of the churches, the school district, and the government. And what it consists of primarily is when these kids begin these early referrals in school, when we know that they're going to end up in the system or leaving school, and sometimes that's second and third grade, as soon as that child makes more than two appearances, say, or whatever the criteria is going to be in the principal's office, then the principal has a nearby church or a nearby nonprofit that has met all the criteria to provide mentors. The mentors are trained. Well, that child is immediately hooked up with a mentor in the second, third, fourth, and fifth grade, and that will change the direction for a lot of kids. My friend Dr. Joyce Lynn Elders, who was the Surgeon General of the United States when Bill Clinton was the president, and I was on Bill Clinton's cabinet when he was the governor here, and Joyce Lynn Elders and I were friends. She said one time to me something that I've never forgotten. She said that kids can't be what they can't see. And that just always stuck with me, and that shows me the importance and tells me the importance of having good, positive role models in communities for a lot of these kids. Now, I'm saying, a lot of the families are just simply overwhelmed. They're good families trying to do the best they can, and they just have so many negatives in their lives that they need help. And government's not going to be able to do that. We see that now in this, the way that the politics are now, that government is not going to be able to do that. And that shows the importance of community involvement, church involvement. We have to engage in the Arkansas Department of Youth Services. We have recognized the importance of reaching out and partnering with faith-based organizations and offering them technical assistance. And that's the way you change things in a community. You have to do it from the ground floor up rather than the other way. And you do that by having good, strong people. And you get the fella, just like the young man that's talking about, he needs some help. He does need some help. But he needs to understand that if he really wants to help himself, there's help available. And he's got to just not be talking the talk. He's got to walk the walk, too, because there are a lot of people that, by him getting in front of them, that other people might really want the help. So there's just something for everybody to do in this, I'm telling you. And if you've got an escalating homicide rate or if you've got an escalating high school dropout rate, that's the time to really begin addressing it at the prevention and intervention level. That's the only way we're going to deal with this issue in the United States. And I've been around it since the late 80s. I can tell you I've seen a lot of things come and go, but you cannot and you must not underestimate the power of a united community in dealing with these issues.
If you just tune in, you're listening to the all-new KLHD 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic, gang violence. Are your colors worth dying for? If you're on the line and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, call us up at 347-850-8390, and again, press 1. A reminder, AJ and Kundalini are manning the chat room today, so if you have a question or a comment, post it up in chat, and they'll bring it to the panel. I'm sorry?
This is Cole.
Okay.
I had a couple quick questions for you before you move on, if that's okay.
Okay, go ahead.
I wanted to ask the guys on the panel, because something that I was interested, because I keep hearing these ages, and these are very young ages that I keep hearing that are coming forward that are talking about being a part of gangs. And my first question I want to ask you is, how is this information being relayed to you guys? Is there, like, are there counselors coming to you guys, or are parents actually bringing their children and saying, hey, you know, I'm having an issue dealing with my child, you know, I need some help? How are you guys receiving this information? What's the connection? Where's the communication coming from?
Well, nope. Me, as in a juvenile system, I got them at the age of 10, and not long ago, really, in the educational system, they come through like a DAEP program. You know, and they come in as the early as the ages now in the education system. I've seen a kid probably the age of 7 talking about gangs.
Mm.
But that's because his brothers and his family, his whole family is tied into that. And a lot of it is Hispanics. Where I am, you know, you got Hispanics. That's a big problem that's starting to occur, you know, where I am.
Steve, how are you coming about the information? You're out there on the ground, aren't you?
Yeah. I see them every day. I mean, I'm in the neighborhood where they are. I talk to a lot of them. I mean, I've even been even as far as in McAllen, that's at the bottom of Texas, where I've seen a lot of Hispanics. That's where it's got worse. And now, you know, now I'm here in East Texas, and I see the same thing that's coming from where I was at years ago and saw it there, and I see it spreading, you know, further and further out in the Texas area into some of the smallest neighborhoods that you could even think of right now. I mean, that comes to play with the media, too. That's why I bring that in play. Because, I mean, I got little kids singing songs, and I'm like, they don't even know what they're singing about. If they actually knew, or actually parents would actually listen and pay attention to what the kids are doing and what they're saying, you might would stop that. Because some of the songs that you hear them singing on the radio has a different meaning, and actually what the rapper was saying.
Steve, how do you come about your experience? You work where now, Mr. Novak?
At the Division of Youth Services for the state of Arkansas. So a lot of our information that we have is statistical data that we get from education, the education system, and the court system, and so on and so forth. And I'm not saying that there are a lot of 10 and 11-year-old gang members. I'm saying there are a lot of 10 and 11-year-old kids who could very well be, who are on the cusp, who are associated and who are being immersed in it. So that's why intervention and prevention is so important at those early ages. And that's, frankly, one of the reasons that we're beginning to see the rise once again, because over the years, when Bill Clinton was the president, a lot of attention and funding was paid to the intervention and prevention field. And then when the war started and the money shifted, a lot of those programming went away and the concentration on that went away. And those kids that we were reaching in those programs are reaching their mid and late teen years now. So it just makes sense that because we eliminate a lot of prevention and intervention training and funding and programming, that those individuals now are growing into the years where they are going to start committing crimes.
Okay. Does that answer your question, Kundalini?
Yeah, because I just find that pretty interesting, because I see a missing piece somewhere, because I keep hearing the education system is bringing it, and I also keep hearing that part of the deal is if they need to be educated, and I don't hear, and I'm not seeing anything against it, because I don't know what's going on with all of these people, but I'm not hearing parents. I'm hearing that there's these communication gaps that are going on, and another important fact that I'm glad Steve just mentioned it, I believe, is in reference to the finances, because working in promotions and dealing with a lot of entertainers in hip-hop, one of the things that we've been trying to do, at least here in Dallas and Fort Worth, is trying to get artists involved in being proactive within the community and within events and bringing attention to things of this nature. And I don't see a lot of involvement from that standpoint of those events being created, especially because a lot of the, not only the state and government funding, but even in the city, a lot of funding is being pulled back, and nobody's talking about, hey, we need to figure out a way to come together and raise our own finances so that we don't have to depend on these particular issues to pull back, that these things are already in place. Because I know Dallas, a lot of their events that they have, Martin Luther King Day, Juneteenth, Harambe, a lot of these events that are for the public to bring people together, to give them a chance to get educated, have HIV testing, et cetera, et cetera. The city is pulling that. They're pulling money out of that. They're pretty much not even involved in that, pretty much. So, and none of the people who are actually over these events or over these organizations are saying, hey, you know, instead of waiting until the last minute, we need to come up with a way to raise some money to make this happen, or else we're not going to have it in the next year. And I was just curious, like, this is just, you know, 10, 11-year-olds, I mean, that's kind of, that's really crazy to me. And then to not be talking about finances, knowing that that's a big cusp of it, you know, I just think that talk needs to go on. And I want to ask, is that talk going on? Because since there are people in the government and the cities are pulling out of this money, what are the people who are talking about, hey, we need to create something to generate this revenue?
They don't exist. We're going to go back to the phone lines. Area code 323. Good afternoon. You are on center stage.
Yes, yes. How everybody doing?
Fine. How are you?
Good. I'm just listening to the interview and whatnot, you know, about how young these children are getting involved in this. I'm one of those people, you know, who feel like, you know, I want to see these young people try as adults, you know, when they commit these adult crimes. I'm like, don't show me any pictures of when they was in school or how their feet don't reach the ground in a courtroom. I'm not trying to hear that. I think that, you know, you keep saying teach, but people are going to do what they want to do. You know, we say the same about sex disease. Teach. They've been taught. They know now, you know, that this is their choices they're making. And the same with these children. Teach. You know, we done gave them programs or whatever. People are making choices. And we got to say in 2011, like, there's consequences and there's accountability. And stop making excuses like, oh, the community needs to do that. These children need to do. They need to be, you know, like they need to stay in their lane and whatnot. But when they make these choices, this is what's going to happen, you know. And we got enough programs out there. We got enough. So I don't think, again, it's like they need to be taught or we need to come up with more programs. I think it needs to be more accountability. And it is what it is, you know. You stop making excuses for these children, you know. Because I just saw on TV, they're committing heinous crimes now. These teenagers, I'm in California. I see these young kids. I don't look at them as like 10 or 11 years old when I see them at night riding bikes or looking out for drug, whatever. I look at them as who they are and who they show me, the choices they made, and I will not hesitate to kill a kid if he stepped to me a certain way and whatnot, because I got to worry about him, whatever. So that's my two cents. It's like they're not kids no more, you know, and we just need to stop talking.
Where are you from?
I think he said he's from California. You know, this is the Wojciech here. One of the latest neuroscience, the science by physicians shows that we cannot treat children the same that we treat adults. Your frontal lobe in men, the frontal cortex of your brain isn't even fully functioning and formed until you're 25 years old. So we cannot expect a 10, 11, and 12-year-old. Now, I agree there's some pretty bad 10, 11, and 12, and 14, and 16-year-olds out there. We have to figure out a way to deal with those. But we just absolutely must quit locking kids up. If you treat a kid like a hardened convict, that's how they're going to act. That's what all of the science
is leading to. My point is they are hardened convicts, and they're not. I mean, if he's old enough to hold a gun, he's, you know, and shoot you or whatever, I'm not trying to have no conversation with him. Your frontal lobe, you got a gun, just like, you know what you're doing. There's accountability.
Let me ask you this. Okay, you say that he knows how to hold a gun at 10 years old and everything else. A lot of times they've been taught how to hold that gun by somebody maybe 20 years old compared to that. That 20-year-old taught that 10-year-old how to hold that gun. But see, one of my thing is that a lot of people don't know that a lot of those kids only have one single parent and things like that. You might have seen them riding at 10 o'clock at night.
A lot of people got single parents.
I understand that. Not what I'm saying is that parent might be working a 10 to 6 shift. That's why that you saw that kid riding that bike at 10 o'clock at night. That parent might not be there.
Life is about choices, and it is what it is. You can't get past it.
Can I make a comment, please?
Okay.
And I apologize to your guest and whatnot. I'm just passionate about this. I apologize if I'm coming off kind of whatever.
See, my point is life is about choices, but there are age groups where the choices that they make are the ones that are given them. And I think just like you were saying about the mentoring groups and other groups, we're not talking about establishing new groups. There's already groups there established. I'm saying it's time for us to be men in our community, and being a man in your community is not just being a father to those seeds that you think that you grew yourself. You are a father to your whole community. And see, that's the problem that we have. We have all these men that are stepping aside, letting people pass, and you will see the little boy and the little gangster boy that you see. If you stop and you talk to him for a minute, he's just a little boy. Those are the only choices he had because he hadn't been presented with any other choices.
Exactly.
Oh, he has been presented other choices. He chose, like again, the problem, too, is like these not just little boys. You got grown men in these gangs, too, now. And I'm saying, they have a choice.
They chose to do the wrong thing. I know people that live in Dallas, I was born in Dallas. I know people who live just in Oak Cliff and never been out of the Oak Cliff area. That means they don't know outside of their environment. So if that kid is in an environment that's nothing but gangs, he might know right or wrong, you say, but if he's in that environment and there's nothing but gangs, what else does he have to do? But
I agree with you. You know, you can't be an angel when you're surrounded by devils, but you got to, you know, that's the choice you make. You know, like you say, hey, if I got to represent, like when we go to jail or whatever, you know the choice you make. You say, hey, I got to get in some gang, or you know, I'm going to be taken advantage of or whatever, you know. So, you know, again, it still comes down to that choice that you got to, you know, maybe your circumstances is messed up or whatever, but you still got to make a choice.
No,
okay,
let me ask
a quick question real quick, because one thing that I'm missing from this whole conversation, from this brother that's speaking on these children doing these things, let me ask you a question, my brother. Are you by any chance participating in any organization that is doing any form, shape, or fashion of preventative maintenance for these young brothers who are caught up in these situations? And if so, what is that organization?
Now, again, to answer that question, you know, short and briefly, I would say no. You know what I mean? And it's not just brothers. You can't blame society. You can't, again, it comes back to accountability.
I'm not asking you to blame society.
It's not my fault that they chose to make the choice.
You don't see the problem.
you don't see the problem with being a part of the problem and not having an alternative.
I'm not
or
a part of the problem
because
I pay tax. I pay taxes like everybody else, you know what I mean? I do. I obey
so,
the law.
So you're leaving it up to your
that.
Taxes to do something that you see every day in your own
neighborhood? No, I use it to obey in the law. And when I obey
okay.
the law,
so
you know, that
you
know, you either
so
part of the problem or
the
solution.
Law.
And I'm a part of the solution is obeying the law and making the right choices. Now, that's
but
what I do as
a
role model.
You
know, in my neighborhood or in my church or wherever, you know, I'm a role model, whatever, what I do. You know, I can't, you know, I just say that we got to stop, you know, making these excuses, you know, like for these kids and whatnot, and call them kids when they do these heinous crimes or when they choose a certain thing. We're like, if you make a certain choice, there is a consequence, and that's what it is.
And I can respect you saying it's a consequence. All I'm saying is this plain and simple, my brother. We could use a brother like yourself to talk to these young kids. We could use a brother like yourself in some organization somewhere within your own community to help be a part of the solution. Don't just leave it up to just hoping it's going to happen because that's the problem.
No, see, you're assuming that. I'm saying I'm doing my part. We get these marches, we get these million man marches.
I'm not even talking about a march, brother.
And we get caught up in all the symbolism.
I'm talking about you
as
an individual, my brother. I didn't ask you to march.
At the end of the day, you can only affect the people around you in your space, and that's what I choose to do. I affect the people in my neighborhood, you know, where I'm at, in my space, or whatever.
That's why I asked you, are you part of an organization, or is there something? What are you doing?
You know, the thing is, you don't have to be part of an organization to make a difference. I'm just doing my part, you know, like each one.
And how are you doing that? How are you doing your part?
Again, you know, I see you saying that, but I said, like, what I'm saying, what I'm doing is I'm in where I fit in, you know, I'm part of the solution instead of the problem. Now,
let me
they
jump
choose
in.
To be part of
okay.
the problem.
All right.
Let me jump in.
Okay.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHT's 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic, gang violence. Are your colors worth dying for? If you're on the line and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, call us up at 347-850-8390 and again press 1. A reminder, AJ and Kundalini are manning the chat room today, so if you have a question or a comment, you can also post it up in chat. Melvin Carter, I remember you telling me this week that no matter how bad some of these kids are, they're still somebody's child.
Exactly. Wow, I'm listening to the individual from area code 323. I guess that's California.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big problem. That there's a disconnection between, especially in the African American community, between the males, the older males, and our younger males. This is where the strife begins. We don't really see the problem until the problem happens in our own families. When we realize that, you know, Lil Johnny or Lil Jane or whoever, you know, was a good person and they just got involved or they got caught up. But when we see other people's children, then, you know, we label them gang members. But first of all, we got to understand they're human beings. They're human beings first. They're not gang members first. They're human beings.
Human beings.
Treat them accordingly as a human being, you know, and locking them up. Is that's preposterous. I mean, you know, we've tried that and it's not working. You know, it's not working. Holding them accountable. Yes, I do believe we should hold those accountable. And the kids that come through my program understand that for every action there's a consequence. But also, let's get to some prevention. Let's try to stop that kid from doing the things that they may do. You don't know what the conditions are. You don't know what the tone has been set. In these neighborhoods, so that a kid would do what they do, you know. And the brother did ask, what are you? You say you're the part of the solution. Well, I didn't hear that. I mean, I hear that you're part of the problem. I mean, because you again feel that you know, locking them up, I guess, is the way to go, or maybe just taking some lining them up on the wall and shooting all of them. I don't know what you know that you know. But it doesn't seem like you want to be part of the solution. And the solution is we've got to take our neighborhoods back, you know, not forcefully, but we've got to integrate ourselves with our younger brothers and sisters. You know, we've always wanted a generation of individuals. I tell you what, these young kids right now, You know, they may be shooting and killing and doing all the wrong things, but I guarantee you, if we can redirect that energy, if we can take that energy and put it in a positive direction, no one's sitting down and saying to them, you know, hey, this is what you need to do. This is how you need to live. This is, you know, this is how you become a good citizen. You know, when they turn on the television, what are they seeing? Hell, they see congressmen and all these other so-called people who are supposed to be leaders of our free world. They're going at each other. They're fighting. They're stealing. They're, you know, so, I mean, that trickles down to our kids. They see that, you know. And so we as responsible individuals, whether we're part of an organization or whether we just go from door to door, or whether we just take care of our next-door neighbor, we have to stand up as black men, white men, Hispanic men. We as men have to stand up and correct this problem.
Steve Novacek, how many kids of your very own have been involved in gangs, your biological children? Steve?
None.
Okay. But how many children have you reached out to that were not your own children to help them?
Oh.
The caller has left. I guess y'all scared him off. But anyway, but my point is that you're not directly in terms of blood connected to any of these kids, but you've reached out to I don't know how many kids and probably saved I don't know how many lives in Little Rock because you cared, not because you had to, but because you chose to.
You know, a big part of mine, frankly, was my job as coroner. I had to deal with the parents of the kids that had died. And that was so profoundly moving in my life to sit with a parent who had lost a child and try to explain to him, you know, because of poor decisions or poor whatever. And you know, in all honesty, there were some very bad parents. But what I found is that that was a very small number that were just truly bad parents. The majority of them were parents that were just floundering around, that needed help, that didn't understand and realize the complexity that their children were living in this day and time, that it's so much different than it used to be. And so it's just one of those things that just I felt, you know, something in my life just had to change. And seeing all those kids' parents, that was the thing that moved me. And I think anybody that deals with that situation, and I would hope that that gentleman was just angry and maybe blowing off steam and frustrated, and I understand that. That's a big part of what we're dealing with. But I'll tell you that the thinking that a 10-year-old child can be treated the same as we treat a 35-year-old person, it just does not work. We just cannot do. We cannot continue that in this country. It has to change.
Okay, let's go back to the phone lines. The phone number is not showing up, but one angry view. Good afternoon.
I just heard two things, and one of which I agree with.
Okay.
You can't treat a 10-year-old like a 35-year-old.
Okay.
But I also heard somebody say that you can't throw them all in jail. Well, let me tell you something. I got a 3.5-year-old. If we run by a law in this country that, and our precepts of law are such that the innocent are given every opportunity not to be caught up in the system. In other words, if we let people that are guilty go because an innocent person goes free, that's what this country's about. However, also innocent people deserve to be able to walk around freely in this country. Now, if you've got people, I don't care what age they are, 10, 11, 12, picking up firearms and shooting people, then they deserve to be in jail. They deserve to be segregated from society because the people who aren't doing anything, who are innocent, deserve to be able to walk around innocently. Look, I'm not going to hand my 3.5-year-old a firearm to protect himself. I'm not going to hand my 10-year-old a firearm to protect himself either. When he's 18 years old, we might just have that discussion, but it's not going to happen now. And when you say we can't lock them up, I say, you know what? You've lost a whole generation of kids. Lock them up. And
hey,
start working on what created them, because you're not going to fix it.
Can I say this as a juvenile correction officer? You say lock them up. I understand that, and my thing is this, is that at 10 years old in that age frame, do your kids play PlayStation 2s and stuff like that? They got games out there that kills on games. And what those kids do is take those games and actually when you see TV and media, they think that maybe you can shoot a person and it's okay with it.
Because oh, I don't believe that. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I don't believe that any child.
A lot of kids are told at those ages, as far as gang members, is that if you do a crime, you're going to go to the juvenile system and get out. Once you turn 18, your record is clean. That's what they tell them. So that's what their mind frame is that when you go to juvenile, it's nothing but a babysitting camp. And I'm going to
well,
be
who's
honest
telling
with you,
them
in the state
that?
Of Texas.
Huh? Who's telling them that?
Who's telling what?
Who's telling them that?
I work for juvenile system. That's what those kids are being told by their older gang members, the 20 years old that don't want to go to the prison, but they have the 10 year olds to do their work for them. In other words, putting in work for the OGs is what you want to call it. But that's what I'm saying is that you got those young older men telling those kids that hey, you go to juvenile system. It's so easy in the juvenile system that you go through there that you'll be a cakewalk. And it
yeah,
is
well,
easy
is
in the juvenile system.
Is that true?
Dr. Samir, what are you seeing on the street? You're in the gang unit here in Fort Worth. What do you see when they're coming in young? I mean, should they go to jail? What do you think the penalty should be?
This is really interesting. Jail doesn't solve the problem. It used to be that as a country, I guess as a culture here, that when a person went to jail, they went to jail to be rehabilitated, and they came back to be a more productive person. Let me
say that. But that's not what jail is in this country.
Yeah, exactly. As a matter of fact, the mission statement of most prisons, each state has their own what they call Bureau of Prisons. The vast majority of these prisons throughout the country have removed the word rehabilitation out of their own mission statement because they cannot and do not and will not rehabilitate a human being.
Well, I don't think they have any interest in rehabilitating anybody. I think the mission statement of most jails in this country, since a lot of them are private now and the government has turned it into a for-profit enterprise, most missions, I think, of most of these jails are to fill their beds at any cost.
Sure, I agree with that. However,
don't miss the point that I made. The point that I made was that innocent people who aren't breaking the law, who aren't hurting other people, have a right to continue doing so. And they should be able to have an expectation that their law enforcement, which should have been used to be called peace officers, now it's law enforcement, and that's another thing that you can blame the federal government for. But that law enforcement is not capable of protecting those people. Now, I didn't hear and I didn't listen to the early part of this, whether you were blaming guns for it or not. I would hope not. But I'm telling you right now, my statement is if you've got a bunch of these kids, then they should be looked at on a case-by-case basis by a judge, a competent judge, who decides whether they go in as a juvenile or an adult. Whether they get out at 18 or they don't get out at 18.
Mr. Levi Williams has joined the conversation. Mr. Williams, what do you think about a 10-year-old going to jail for committing a heinous crime?
Okay, first of all, let me just say hello to you. Panel, and I'm sorry that I'm a little late. You said a 10-year-old?
Yeah, I think y'all talking about 10-year-olds, very young children committing crimes.
Well, I don't think that we should try to incarcerate a 10-year-old.
Yeah, but hold on a second. Let's be clear about this. I didn't say throw a 10-year-old in jail. I said segregate. Get that 10-year-old, if that 10-year-old's dangerous, away from other people who are not.
Where are you going to segregate him at?
Well, I don't know. That's up for discussion. But that's not an answer to someone like me who has a kid that isn't a criminal, who's not hurting people, who ends up getting killed because nobody wanted to do anything about little Johnny, who's 10 years old, because he is 10 years old.
Well,
go explain that to me. Go explain that to me when my...
Go ahead.
Go explain that to me when my son gets killed, and you tell me, well, you know what, we're sorry your son got killed, and we know he's not in the gang, and he's not anything, but We didn't know what to do with Little Johnny, who is in the gang, and because of that, we just happened to leave Little Johnny out in society to hurt people.
Well, I think, and I said this is Kundalini talking, I think, and one thing that I see that happens a lot because we have such short time to talk about, I think a lot of times we hear things that are not being said, and I don't think anybody, and anybody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think anybody on the panel is saying that we should just let it go and just let it be.
Exactly.
I think the whole purpose of the discussion is that we're saying there are some issues, plural, there's some issues that need to be discussed, and that in order for them to be handled, what kind of, what pretty much needs to happen is there needs to be a come togetherness. I don't want to say like, you know, a dream world. We all finna hold hands and say, well, type of thing going on. But for those that will, they need to come together and participate in this realistic world that we live in that is not TV. It is not made up. These things are happening. There are young kids that are happening. And not all of these young kids is heinous and something that's murdering. It might be something as simple as stealing, helping selling crack. There's lots of issues. But if we come together and not only just talk about them, and I think Steve, I think, made mention of it earlier, we need to become active participants by linking with people who understand what's going on in the streets and not just saying something needs to happen. That's why I asked the gentleman earlier how you participating. And paying taxes, dude, you pay taxes when you go to the grocery store. That's not enough.
Well, you know,
one thing that we have to realize, and recognize is that we weren't, the conversation wasn't really about 10-year-olds who were in gangs. When we were talking that young, we're primarily talking about prevention and intervention, and I don't think anybody would endorse if a child has committed a heinous crime like that, that the child just get a slap on the fingers. There's lots of treatment facilities, and there's lots of new studies in that area. But I also know that what communities have to understand and recognize is that there are a lot of kids who are trapped in that environment. And many times we in the fix-it field or in the attempt-to-fix field or the assistance field, we fail to put ourselves into the reality of the individuals that we're trying to help. It, to me, it's wrong to sell drugs to some 14-year-old kid out here that might be the only thing that he's ever seen his entire life to help feed his family. And that's wrong, and it's just, it's a terrible fact of reality that we just have to face, that other people's realities are not the same as ours. And that means that we have to change those things at a very basic level, which is why I'm just such an endorser of these neighborhood coalitions, people in neighborhoods reaching out and helping one another, and churches and faith-based community coming together and working with the government. And that's the way we're going to solve this issue. And there's something in it for everybody, conservatives, liberals. And I will tell you, yes, there are some individuals out here that are very bad young people. And we will always have facilities, unfortunately, where we will have to house those and segregate those to keep the rest of the community and the rest of the children safe. But what I'm saying is you cannot put a child who stole a bicycle in with children who have killed people and not expect the child who stole the bicycle to generate up to that level of the others. So
well,
there
so
has
let me
to be
ask you a question. Wasn't it you that said that we should be focusing more on gang prevention than we are gang control? Was that not your comment?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I mean, we have to have gang control, but I'll tell you, if you dry up the recruit pool from where they're coming from, and that means the community has to recognize that almost the six big reasons that young people get in gangs, we're told over and over, they are identity, recognition, belonging, discipline, love, and respect. What you do is at the very basic level in communities is you offer them programs where those things are given to them. And that means people like the guy that was on the phone a minute ago that said he'd shoot a kid, maybe he can go spend a little time talking about his anger with other kids and why they're angry, and teaching kids, showing kids what they can be.
Mr. 323 is back on the line with us. Mr. 323, would you like to elaborate on that comment you made?
Yeah, you know, I would have to go back to, you know, when we were talking about these kids, how they're bred. You know, you got the anti-bullying campaign that came out a couple of years ago when they were trying to deal with these bullies. If you look in the schools, children are committing suicide. And like the other caller was saying, the good kids, the good people, the good citizens shouldn't have to go to school, go in their communities and be threatened. They should feel safe, but these kids go to school and they're bullied. They commit suicide, and you're seeing it over and over again, and these schools are housing them, the jails are housing them, and like you said, the mission statement isn't even in, you know, correcting
it's
the situation.
Is 323 area code Los Angeles?
Yes.
323, okay. Do you know that a couple of years ago there was a study done by the Los Angeles School District that showed that 38% of the kids in the Los Angeles School District suffer from PTSD? 38% of the kids, and that's because of the environment that those children are being raised in. And
I definitely agree with that. You know, again, you know, the violence, you know, the traumatic. It's almost like they're in Iraq. But what I'm saying is, you know, like I said again. Like the other call, they need to be segregated because, like, if you continue to let these bullies go in school, and you know, the principal just winks an eye at, well, kids going to be, they treat them as kids, well, that's what kids do. Well, these other kids are psychologically traumatized, and, you know, and they're killing themselves or cutting themselves or dropping out of school and becoming part of that other environment, or they're bringing weapons to school to protect themselves because of this other. Whatever. So
exactly.
Again,
you know what? Let me add something in here real quick, if I might.
Is this one angle
you just? Yeah, you just watched
a
man in Arizona shoot at a congresswoman, kill a 9-year-old girl who has been screaming for help for how many years? And nobody institutionalized this guy, not his parents, not the college, not the high school, nobody. Nobody wanted to do anything about this guy, and they left this guy in society who was obviously nuts. He needed help, and maybe if he had gotten that help, he wouldn't have gone out and killed all those people, but because everybody just left him to his own and left him out there like a rabid dog, he finally bit somebody. And now what they'll say is, well, you know what, throw him in jail. Well, now you got a guy who's a nutcase, who's going to learn to be a real nutcase but a killer as well when he gets out of the jail system, if he ever does. He'll probably end up killing a guard in jail or killing somebody else in jail who's in there on a minor charge, and then he'll end up killing that person. So, again, just throwing him in jail isn't even the answer to that one. This guy never got the help that he needed.
I would like to add, like, even in jail, they understand the importance of segregation because how they segregate the violent so-called criminals from, you know, the other criminals or whatever. Now, if the jail know that, why doesn't society do that and say, well, they need to be segregated. We can't, you know, because these kids, regardless of their background or whatever they went through, they are acting out and they're bullies now. And what the law is going to say is, well, until they break the law, you know, the same with stalking laws. Until they break the law, we can't do anything, so we got to let them act out.
Well,
so,
who's going to pay for that?
Well, like I said, we're paying for it now with the suicides and with the deaths, so we're going to say, do you want to pay for it like that, or do you want to pay for it with these other budgets, you know, that they have or whatnot, you know, put it on one of the so-called pork spending things or whatever, because...
Well,
you
that,
know,
that's
again,
where,
we, either way, we're going to end up paying for it, either with deaths or, you know, again, the anti-bullying thing in school. You know, if you're going to just wait until they break a law, then you get these whatever. So when they're acting out, you know, what can you do if they're not breaking the law, you know, or like with the kids and whatnot, because they're juveniles, you don't see what they did because it's locked up in records. So
hold on a second. Hold on. First of all, this Jared guy that shot the 9-year-old girl. This
Today's
Jared
subject
guy
is about gang violence. Are we talking about gang violence, or are we just talking about disturb young people?
Well, I think that goes hand in hand, doesn't it? So are you telling me, hold on a second, are you telling me that a 12-year-old who would kill another 12-year-old isn't disturbed?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that at all. No, I'm just saying, we're just trying to stay on subject is what I'm saying. And so
the
I understand
is,
that there's
no,
a
the
lot
point
of
is, you should segregate them. I think you have a whole generation that's lost. And you better start working on what's creating the new generation, because I think you should give up on the one that you got. Do what you can, but you're not gonna get them out.
You didn't just say give up on them, did you?
I said, give up on them in the sense that you're going to make them into productive members of society. You're not. Your job should be to protect the productive members of society and find out why you created them in the first place.
Dr. Samir,
don't you think that's the problem that we have today, is that when we say give up on one society, that doesn't mess up another society? That triggers just like a disease, just like AIDS. Give up on AIDS, everybody's going to die.
Well, not if you put them somewhere, not if you segregate them.
Where are we going to put everybody who has a disease? You can't put it spreads. I mean, you can't.
Well, I didn't
say
disease. I said anybody's
out
there.
I would like to say gang violence.
We're going to go back on point, though. We're talking about gang violence. Are you covering the first dying for? We do want to stay focused on the subject matter today because, you know, in past shows, we'll get off on one thing and we'll go way.
I got a gang violence comment, you know, because, you know, like on gang violence comment, just like over in Iraq right now, it's like they say it's driven by poverty, driven by whatever, so they suicide bombers because my family's going to be taken, so they do that bad crime. And these gang violence, they said, well, you know, a lot of kids, I'll go back to bullying again, they said, well, if I don't join this gang, they're going to beat my, you know, I don't think they'll cuss on here. They're going to do a little something, something. Okay. So they join these gangs sometimes for protection, and then they get into other things and whatnot, you know, because, like, when you live in these neighborhoods. But then you got the other group of kids that's come from these rich homes, and they want to prove that they're down, so they do stuff and stuff like that, and these gang things. So I just want to add, you know, like, again, I'll go back to the choices again, you know, with these gangs and whatnot. A lot of us, we blame the society, we blame whatever. But at the end of the day, you know, these gangs and whatnot, they are here and whatnot, and, you know, and you can try to dress them up, let them play basketball, but at the end of the day, unless you change the environment, you know, the poverty, the jobs, the whatever, you know, you after you finish playing basketball, guess what? He gonna go back and rob somebody. He gonna go back. He gotta walk through that same neighborhood back to his house. So he gotta be in a gang, or he gonna kill somebody, or he gonna get killed or beat up. So after he comes from your basketball thing, your after school program, if you ain't gave him no job, gave his mother no job, gave his neighborhood no job, he still gotta walk back to that same neighborhood. So I say one way to infiltrate the gangs is, you know, like to say, well, what about the money, the education, whatever. You know, some people can't vote no more after they've been in the gang. Some people can't get a job no more when they get in the gang. So they feel trapped. So if there's a program that's saying, like, okay, if this child, like on a case-by-case basis, if he, you know, if he really shows he want to redeem himself, he might get out of the gang if he knows that, guess what, we might let you vote again. We might give you a job regardless of your record. We might whatever. But if they feel hopelessness, and that's what I think is a lot in the gangs, you know, when I watch the documentaries and all that, you know, you hear hopelessness. I don't even know if I'm going to live to 20 or I ain't no jobs out here for me, or I ain't going to make no money. You hear hopelessness. So, you know, if we, you know, instill some kind of hope and whatnot, you know. And again, if you got somebody who's a violent criminal, a repeat offender, he's going to keep doing it. Like I said again, you might have to write him off. I mean, that's a reality. I know it sounds bad, but that's a harsh reality that everybody, you ain't going to reach everybody, but just reach the people that you can reach and keep it moving.
Okay.
You know?
Here's how you
encapsulate what he just said.
Yes, sir.
When you treat your dog for fleas in the summertime, you buy all that expensive stuff. If you don't treat where that dog sleeps, they get fleas all over them again. So we are doing all of these things with kids, trying to do our best. That's why that little effort that I was talking about, the collaboration between the schools and the faith-based community, when Johnny starts getting referred in the second grade, you start right then building a strong mentor for the not only Johnny but for his family. So you begin to change at the very young age. That's, we know that the majority of kids in the DYS system started their career path by referrals in school, and the schools just ignored it until they kicked them out and made it a public problem. So why not have a collaborative effort in the community that's run by the churches and maybe subsidized by some nonprofits? There's people can be creative and come up ways to deal with this issue.
I agree. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHC 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for today's topic, gang violence. Are your colors worth dying for? If you're on the line and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, dial us up at 347-850-8390, and again, press 1. A reminder, AJ and Kundalini are in the chat room today. So if you have a question or a comment, post it up in chat, and they'll present it to the panel. Another thing. How much of gang activity is being controlled from behind bars? Mr. Levi Williams, how much of what we see going on the street is actually the shots are being called from the prison?
Well, if we could, of course, your panel is talking basically about a lot of different issues that our community and country is facing, but the answer to your question, the major gangs now are organized gangs. And those gangs operate for a profit. And that's that. Sometimes we get confused. And confused means that there used to be where kids are in gangs because there's a little turf war. You know, you live in this neighborhood, I live in this neighborhood. You fly in this color, I fly this color, you down with this clique. And this whole little neighborhood thing. When you're talking about gangs operating out of the prison system where they have influenced folks on the street, those are organized gangs. We're talking about drug dealing. We're talking about stealing cars. We're talking about parts of cars. We're talking about trading weapons. We're talking about major organized operation, not the little neighborhood spats that we see sometimes that we get confused with that. It's more organized gangs now for profit than just turf gang.
Wow. Okay.
Because in the early, 2000, we're moving into the 90s, the late 90s, you had neighborhood turf gangs. That's still there, but not as much. Matter of fact, most of the time when you hear of a police department says, oh, gee, it was gang-related, and a neighborhood piece where it was just a drive-by, usually that's an argument about girlfriend, boyfriend, or neighborhood. The majority of these gangs are organized. And the majority of the gangs are organized, and they still are controlled by people who are in prison, people who are out of prison. It's an organized gang. I mean, it's deep.
Wow. Dr. Severe, what kind of weapons are we seeing? You're in the gang unit here in Fort Worth. What kind of weapons are you all confiscating from these gang members once they're arrested?
I mean, the most popular weapon out on the street is a 9mm handgun. And, mm-hmm. And that became, I would say, from a criminal street gang standpoint, that became very popular by way of the rap music, gangster rap that suggested that this is your staple of the gang, that you get your 9mm handgun and you can go out and you can terrorize the world with it. What we're actually seeing more so are assault rifles and shotguns. Assault rifles are actually making a comeback, unfortunately, within the community now, and we're seeing more use of assault rifles and shotguns by gang members.
Wow. So as far as we know, and I hate to paint every gang with the same brush, but is anything positive coming out of the gang life? And I'll start with Mr. Eastwood Rayet. You're currently a gang member. I mean,
yeah,
those of us who don't understand, the life that you all are in, can we look at a gang and see anything positive?
Okay. Yeah.
Tell us what, for those of us who don't understand, tell us what positive, what can we look at a gang and say, oh, they do this positive, so therefore they're not that bad? Explain us. What can we find?
We can find for our community. You know what I'm saying?
You do what for your community?
Oh, we do a lot for our community.
Elaborate. Tell us what you mean.
Oh, we have cookouts. We do barbecues for the community, all that, There's some good things we do, Ain't everything we do is bad.
Okay. Now, are you telling us that with all the other things that we talked about that gangs have done, that the best thing that we can say that you all do is have cookouts? And I'm not. I'm just saying. I'm just asking. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. We do a lot more. You know what I'm saying? I ain't gonna get into all the details, but you know what I'm saying. But we do a lot for our community. You know what I'm saying? Even though we is gangsters, you know what I'm saying? We still gonna do what we do. But you know what I'm saying? We do look out for our people.
Now, most people would consider y'all to be terrorizing the neighborhood, but you're saying that y'all are not always just about terrorizing the neighborhood, that y'all are.
I'm going to say there's a lot. Not the ones that's my age, okay, we don't do that. Now, for them youngsters, you know what I'm saying? They the only one who terrorizes.
Now, how old are you?
Huh?
How old are you?
I'm 35, baby.
Okay. So you teach the younger ones not to terrorize the neighborhood, or do the older ones not have any influence over the young ones? What?
See, my thing is, some of the youngsters I do mess with, but a lot of them I don't. You know what I'm saying? Because they're stupid.
Okay. For the panel members, Eastwood Red said to us earlier, help him. What can y'all do tomorrow to help Eastwood Red get out of the gang that he's into and onto a better life? Example.
There you go. Help me.
Try to help Eastwood Red. 35 years old, still in a gang. We know the end is either going to be prison or it's going to be the cemetery. So can tell Eastwood Red how to go from where he is to a better place?
Not last year, for last. Shot him up back. You know, I almost dead, you know what I'm saying, but I'm still here.
You've been shot how many times?
I've been shot four times, this last time was fatal.
Okay.
I got shot in my back.
Okay. Steve, what would you tell him to do tomorrow to get himself from where he is to on to a better road?
Well, he's got to reach out to somebody, and it sounds to me like he's willing to do that. So somebody down there in his area, his neighborhood, is obviously an intervention and prevention, folks, but he's got to be serious and sincere about what he wants to do. There's a way to do it. There's a way to change, and it has to be sincere. And sometimes, unfortunately, because of the level that people are already involved in, that's a difficult thing to do if they can't move away. It goes back to that flea dipping theory. So, you know, if he truly wants to change, he might have to be given the ability to leave or to move away.
Okay,
can
so he may
this?
Need to get
can
out of his environment in order to get out of the gang.
Can
yeah.
I say this? Can
okay,
I
yes,
say
please.
This? This is Jerome. I was the one who got Eastwood Red to call in. I've been knowing Eastwood Red a long time since he was young. And I've known the things he's been through and the things he's going through. My
okay.
thing is this, is like we go back to help Eastwood Red, is that he might feel no one is even looking after him to even give him a job. He's been shot. He's been locked up. When he puts that on his application, who is the people that's behind the desk or doing the interviews going to say, hey, we're going to accept you no matter what you have done in your past. We need to accept you now, and maybe he can start changing then. We can't wait sometimes till those people change. We have to give them the opportunity first, and then they change.
Okay. Okay. Let me make an announcement real quick. We're going to go over just a little bit, probably about 15 minutes past the 5 o'clock hour. If you're listening via the Internet, you need to get on the phone lines. Call us up at 347-850-8390 and be on the phone lines by straight up 5 o'clock, or you will not be able to hear the remainder of the conversation. Again, if you're listening just via the Internet, you will need to call in at 347-850-8390. First posted on the screen, you need to be on the phone lines by straight up 5 o'clock, or you will not be able to hear the remainder of the conversation. Okay, this is one thing I'd like to say. Eastwood, if you're sincere, I believe there's a group of people comprised on this panel that can help you. I really do. I believe that there's some smart people, and there's some people that do care. There's some people in our local area here. We have Dr. Shabir. We have Levi Williams. We have Melvin Carter.
We're in
the local
where,
area.
Where do Eastwood live? Where? I'm sorry. Where is he calling from?
Fort Worth.
Okay. There's a group over in Fort Worth called Jamoja.
Mm-hmm.
And Jamoja. Matter of fact, I think they have a coalition. I heard one of the panelists talk about coalition. They also have a coalition with a lot of the churches. So just in case that you cannot find them by just asking in the community, you can go actually to – there's a police officer, I think, on the panel also from Fort Worth that's in the gang unit. They might be familiar with Jamoja, but Jamoja is a group of brothers that actually treat people who are trying to get out of gangs. Usually they spend a lot of effort with younger folks, but I think the person that you're talking to is like 30-something, 35. I would ask him to get in contact with this group that's called Jamoja. And I'm willing to bet you if you just ask around the neighborhood in Fort Worth or anybody in Stop 6, they can probably tell you how to get with those brothers, and they can help you. But with that being said, this is the key thing. People operate on skills. So whatever your skill base is, that's what you usually do. If you listen to this brother when he was talking, he said, well, we gangsters. Mm-hmm. Well, gangsters have skills. Those skills is not accepted by society, but they're going to operate on those skills. Until we transfer a skill base, that person is not going to change. Mm-hmm. So the first thing he has to work on is how he team up with a person, a agency, or anybody that will move you to changing your skill base. If not, you're going to go back to your gangster skills. That's just how this is. That's just how we all operate. We operate on the skills that we have. Try to change the skill base. That's the first step. Get a hold of these brothers called Jamoja and Fort Worth.
I think it's actually Emoja, is it not?
Right.
Emoja.
Emoja.
Okay. Let me ask you, why, or is it a myth? Let me ask you, I guess I should rephrase the question. Is it a myth that you have to die out of a game? Because I would understand you don't get out.
No, that's a myth. You might not get completely out. I've had gang members who tell me that they will always be a Crip, but they just don't bang anymore. And that's fine. But the reason that is because when they were 11, 12 years old and they were hungry, that's who fed them. When they were 11 or 12 years old and they needed somebody to help them with a problem, that's who was there to help them. That's why the communities have to recognize the way you beat this problem is to compete with it. To beat gangs, compete with them. It's that simple. And you take and... You strongly structure these programs that can utilize former gang members that you have to closely monitor that activity because it can change at the drop of a hat. And unfortunately, there are others who have done that and they've taken advantage of the situation. But I will tell you, that is a powerful commitment if the rest of the community steps up to the plate and helps with it. It's so powerful.
Eastwood, let me ask a question. Have you wanted for a while to get out of the gang, or you just didn't ever just make the effort to do it, or is today the first time you decided, okay, maybe this isn't for me anymore? Eastwood Rep. Is today the first day that you decided, okay, maybe I don't want this gang life anymore, or... did you decide prior to now that maybe this isn't for me?
Well, I thought about it before, you know what I'm saying, trying to stop, but you know what I'm saying, it's hard.
Okay.
You know, and by me, I've been gangbanging since I was 14, so you know what I'm saying, and it's hard for me just to get out and give it up, you know what I'm saying.
Now, you said something to us this week when Kundalini and I pre-interviewed you, and I thought it was odd for me to hear you say it. I asked you that if you died, who was going to – first of all, I said, you know, your kids need you. So if you died in the event of, you know, some gang activity, then who was going to take care of your kids? I think I was meaning emotionally, you know, who's going to be a father figure for them. But you said to me and to Kundalini that they would be taken care of. And – I didn't understand that you mean financially taken care of, you somebody's going to step up to the plate and you know, support your kids from here on in, or did you mean, like, be a father figure for your kids? And if so, who is going to step up and do all of that?
My father. My father going to be their father figure.
Your who going to be?
I say my father is going to be their father figure.
Okay. Okay. So you will leave that on your father to be their father figure?
Ma'am?
You would leave that on your father to be their father figure. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Okay. If I was to die, yeah.
And as one thing that Steve said earlier, the two leading causes of blacks dying under 35, I believe he said, was AIDS and gang activity, and they're both preventable. So I don't understand if you know that it's preventable. I don't know. But hopefully you're sincere, and hopefully Emoja will be able to help you along with anybody else that you want to connect with that's on this panel. Because I believe what I learned from the research on this is big business. It's more than just the gang life. It's a lot of money being made in this gang life. And so I think it's going to be hard to find dollars like what y'all are used to. So I know that's going to be hard is my point. And so I'll leave that there. But I wanted to know some numbers.
Even if I do get out the game,
uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? I got to still think about what I did to that to somebody years ago. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
Something's still about to happen.
You mean retaliation?
So, you know, even if you have, you know what I'm saying, you still going to have to look over your back because you got to think about what you did years ago. You may have shot one of they homeboys.
That's why I'm saying that sometimes you have to have a complete relocation. The two leading causes of death are AIDS and homicide, not gang involvement.
Okay, homicide. Okay, gotcha. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, correction, homicide. So homicide, meaning, I think the homicide you described was black-on-black male crime, right?
Yes, okay. Yes. But not all of those obviously are gang-related.
Okay.
A lot of them are. And it also depends on what you call gang-related. The police officer that's on the line here, he probably knows this too. It all depends on how you're reporting. And because like I know in Chicago, they have a high incidence of gang-related crime because, for instance, if they stop a guy for DUI that's been identified as a gang member in some database, that's counted as a gang-related crime. It's kind of crazy, but at any rate, those sort of gang-related issues are very difficult to gauge is what I'm saying.
Okay, well, we have two departments here today. Dr. Sabir, what was the number of the gang-related killings in Fort Worth for 2010? Do we know?
No.
Okay. Levi Williams, do we know how many gang-related?
No, not in Dallas. I we probably have that information, but I don't have it. I mean, I can get you that information. But again, I think that one of the panelists is on target with identifying an incident that are gang-related. Because when you put people in that gang database and they commit a crime, an offense that's un-gang-related, and they're in that database, it's sometimes law enforcement count that offense as gang-related because of that.
Right.
That makes sense?
Okay, yes. It does.
It's very difficult to do that. And I mean, it's almost unfair to ask law enforcement to do that because you can't really – I mean, it's just difficult. There are certain things that you know are probably gang-related, but it's just difficult. And the gang, when you start talking gangs, that's an inflammatory issue. And so it's just one of those things that everybody sort of has a different idea about how to deal with it, and it's really not that complex. The most important thing is everybody in the community sitting down and discussing the issue and dealing with it in an open fashion. That means law enforcement, education, and the business community. Everybody's got a role to play. I cannot emphasize that enough. And you have to depend on those people that are in the neighborhoods that are doing the work, like most of your panelists that I hear. I mean, it's obvious these guys, they're all connected and they know what time it is. And so you should depend on those folks in your community. You should utilize them to help you deal with these issues and come up with competitive programming to deal with the reasons young people get involved with the gangs. But the most important thing is you have to look at the root causes for it all and not just try. It's like cancer. You can't just take pain pills and expect cancer to go away. That helps it. But sooner or later, you got to go after it. And I think some of the root causes of the issue are our poverty and just, you know, this sort of feeling of hopelessness and anger that we have created in this country. So I think that everybody in this nation just has to step back a minute and look at themselves and say, how can I become a better person and help our neighborhoods and help our kids see that there's good people in each neighborhood? It's kind of altruistic, I guess, but I sure wish that would happen.
Let me ask a question. When you see a terrorist act, not always, but in a lot of cases, you will see the organization, the terrorist organization that did the act, step up and take credit for it. In these situations of gang retaliations, is that the case? Do they step up, or do you know that that's a situation in which
they might not step up publicly, but it's known in the gang circles.
Okay.
I mean, that intelligence in that community is the street intelligence is just an amazing. It's like a flash fire. And I always, when I do instructional programming and law enforcement's involved, I always tell them the three ways you solve gang crime are intelligence, 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 because it's out there, and it's just almost automatic as soon as it happens.
But they call that snitching, though, right, Steve?
Well, most of them are tagging. Most of them will tag and let you know that they've been in that area and done that crime. That's what they
do.
They tag. They might not say John Doe did it. They're going to say Crip or Blood tagged did that.
And your local experts can read that. And that's what I was saying a little while ago. We could predict within a reasonable degree of certainty where active retaliation was going to take place, and I know that the law enforcement agencies down there, they've been dealing with this stuff a long time, and you can bet that they're on top of it and dealing with it in that fashion.
Wow. So will there ever be a truce? I mean, as far as gang activity is concerned, will we ever rid the community of gang activity?
Takes a tragedy.
I think I think that, like someone said on the panel earlier, it's an organization. It's more of drug dealing and money now.
Business.
Versus neighborhood corner
turf.
Beef.
It's not neighborhood turf. It's just a group of guys that we call gangs, and of course they started out with two colors and derived into a business. I mean, what you're asking is almost like asking Chevrolet, General Motors, don't build any more cars. To say, will we ever resolve our gang problem? Because the gang association, the activity is related to big business. See, listen to the guy that's in the gang right there. The number one thing that he said is that we are gangsters. What that really means is that somebody got to give up something.
Mm.
And that somebody is not a lot of people who are gang-banging on gang members. When you had our little issue right there, it's all about who's selling dope and where and whose area. Most of the time, when you get that's what you're getting, which is very little. But your major stuff that is happening with these guys that are organized in a group that we call gang is about making money.
Yeah.
It's about turning drugs and guns and car parts.
And car parts.
Yeah,
so
it's big business.
It's big business. When we see graffiti, when we go into a neighborhood, let's just say one that we're not familiar with, and we see graffiti, on the buildings and things like that. If we're not familiar with what all that means, should we be concerned?
Yes, most definitely. I think because it could cost your life. When I went to California years ago, way before gangs, I believe this was in the 80s. I was young. I was maybe 13, and I was with my cousins, and I learned that we couldn't even stop at a stop sign. They call it stop and go in California. That means you creep through and you look both ways and you keep going. Because if you stop, you see things in the neighborhood, people will come up to you, shoot you, take you out of your car as gang members, like the guy said, for parts or for anything else. I mean, you should be aware of all of this.
I think it was Steve that on your documentary, on the documentary Banging in Little Rock, I think you said you could walk and read the graffiti and tell what sex they were with and a lot of other things by just reading the graffiti, correct?
Yeah, a lot of people can. You know, your local people
yeah.
understand and know all that. There's a huge difference between just tagging and gangster graffiti. taggers,
yeah.
you know, they're sort of artists, and there's not a lot in that. That's why you have to have somebody that really knows what it says, read it. I've got the three R's of graffiti are read it, record it, remove it. So if you see graffiti, I would say that you should have, your local law enforcement probably has somebody that comes and keeps an intelligence bank on that and then figure out some way to get it taken down. That's real important.
Can I say this? Just Thursday, I got a text from my daughter. She's in the Fort Worth area, but she texted me. The text actually said, this is an alert. And I don't know how true this is about gang members. The new initiation is that they have a kid crying out on the street with a sign saying, take me home now. Okay, if you pick that kid up and take him home, there's gang members there waiting on you to either rape you if you're a female or kill you if you're a male. I don't know how true that is, but those type of things you have to be aware of, too.
Dr. Sabir, have you heard that here in Fort Worth?
No, I haven't heard that, but it doesn't mean that it's not happening, but that's new to me.
Let me say something here. Since if it's not happening, since we said it today on this radio, it will happen.
Well, see, what I'm saying is that I got the text and I can forward it to anybody who wants it.
I believe you because that's one of the number one things that happened on the last day of school.
Yeah.
And on the, if you think, especially in Dallas, on the last day of school, and there's a certain time of the year. I think the same thing in Fort Worth is where it's this initiation, this big initiation day, and last year. A year before last, if you remember, it was about flashing a light.
Yeah, the flashing light. I was just going to mention that, the flashing lights. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. You're totally right about that. And I don't think a lot of people are aware of that, you know.
Well, anybody have any comments? We're going to close out. We went a little over today. Anybody got any final thoughts about gang violence? Are your colors worth dying for? We'll start with you, Mr. Melvin Carter, who's been so quiet the last couple hours.
I've just been digesting everything and listening and learning.
Okay.
And learning.
Okay.
There's been some interesting comments made. Again, I would like to reach out. I did reach out to Mr. Eastwood Red. If he didn't hear me, I'll have you give him my phone number.
Okay.
And he can contact me directly, and
okay.
then we can go from there to assess his situation. To see what we can do to try to help him, you know.
Well, I so appreciate that, brother.
Now that's very nice. Mr. Levi Williams, any final thoughts?
Well, my final thoughts is one of the things that we have to do a better job in parenting skills. That's where our problem lies. If we ever going to resolve any of this, the lockup, the gang banging, the 10-year-olds who are committing crime, the dropout rate, the pregnancy rate, if we resolve any of this, we have to start in all of the social programs with doing a better job in parenting skills. That's our breakdown right there. We have to have parenting skills involved to offset these negative images that control these kids' value system. The ones of you, for all of us who seems to think that we have life on track or we're doing okay, it's simply because our value system will not allow us to take certain action. So if you grew up in an area or family where gang banging, selling drugs is the images that is projected to you, that becomes part of your value system, and you act out what it is that you value. That's the key right there. So parenting skill is the answer, not the police. We think the police is secure all, not locking up. It's not going to work. We can't educate kids that come to school that don't want to be educated. A parent have to send a kid to school that want to be educated. We have to do a better job of parenting skill in this country. That's my final thought.
Okay. Dr. Sabir.
Yes.
Final thought.
Let's just be honest and say that we're not going to ever get rid of gangs. Let's put that out there on the table, okay? However, we can say that gang violence is a different aspect of deviance, which is also a dysfunctional, but it's functional for the existence of any society, which simply says that these are the type of discussions that we should continue to have, whether we agree or disagree. But we should continue to have them. Why? Because it brings us together, and it also helps to promote social change. And I appreciate what you have done over the last couple of hours by bringing us together. Many of us have never met, and perhaps we will continue to have dialogue in the near future. But, you know, in all honesty, we will not get rid of gangs, just like we won't get rid of drugs, but we will always continue to have something to discuss, and it allows us to be bigger and better for the next generation. I don't really care for the comment about giving up on a generation, because if we give up, then what happens to that generation?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So let's continue to do what we have been designed to do, and many of us have calling, and that's why I continue to do what I do.
Jerome Lies, final thought.
Oh, yes. I just feel like I said, God put us on this earth for a purpose, each and every one individual. We need to find out what your purpose is and go at that purpose. And my thing is about that is that with me, a lot of these gang members and a lot of people, all they need is a pat on the back or someone to tell them that, hey, you can do it. Not tell them that they're never, you can never get out, or you never can do this, or never just say can't. Just always put in their mind that they can do something positive and change their life. It's always a possibility.
Steve Novacek.
I think what I would do is just remember what my friend Joycelyn Elder said when she said that kids can't be what they can't see. I think every person in every community needs to think about that and become a model that all kids can look up to. I think that's all I got to say.
Wow.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you. I'd like to say thank you to all my guests. That's Mr. Melvin Carter, Levi Williams, Dr. Sabir, Jerome Lies, and Steve Novacek. A reminder, the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage or the host. And join us next week, January 22nd, for part two of Who Bankrupts America. On behalf of AJ, Kundalini, and myself, we'd like to say thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.